Let's get the show on the road.
Yeah, so we're going to do a very brief chabura today. I just want to get out a few main points in the sugya. So this sugya actually has come up several times in the Rishonim's analysis of loss allocation. Remember that Shemus Hadeshin alluded to it, a few Mordechais that we've seen allude to it. So we're going to just look at the basic features of this sugya, and then actually after Yontif, we'll go back and see how the Rishonim applied it to some of the earlier cases that we've discussed. So there, I think we should think about three separate questions just in looking at this Gemara. The first is, you know, what's the basic principle or principles that emerge? The second is exactly how to define the application of the principle here. And you'll see, is the principle under discussion here, does it apply to the full salary or the full payment of the journey or only half the payment of the journey? And that's going to affect a little bit about which cases we can apply the principle to. And then thirdly, we have to figure out how to situate this principle of loss allocation with many of the nearby principles that, at least on the face of it, are inconsistent with it, that suggest a different rule, a different principle. So how do we reconcile these different principles, and how do we determine which one gets applied when? So here's the straightforward reading of the Gemara and the main principles that emerge. Tan Rabbanan, Hasocher es hasvina v'tavala b'chatzi aderech. You hire a boat or you lease a boat to transport your wine. And of course, the boat drowns midway through the journey. As you could all tell, I was up late last night reading through Cole's reading assignments, trying to refresh my memory of Moby Dick and whaling expeditions. So, Rabbi Nasan Omer, Im Nasan Lo Yitol. Actually, a very interesting thing I read recently. I don't remember if it's in Applebaum's new book, The Economist's Hour. I don't know if anybody saw that. He's like a columnist for the New York Times. But where did I see this? Really interesting analysis about how early insurance companies were all about insuring these whaling expeditions. And like the history of like venture capitalists. Oh, I know where it was. I
think
it was
right. It's Kevin Williamson on National Review just wrote a piece about this.
I gotta look back. Maybe it was like a New Yorker piece. I don't remember. But it's a really interesting thing about how like these early questions of like insurance and venture capitalism all go back to these like whaling expeditions out of Nantucket and, you know, those islands off Boston. Okay, so the Gemara says the following principle for what happened.
Well, I remember reading his article. The main point is that there's a lot of risk. It's like high risk, high reward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think maybe it was a New Yorker article about venture capitalism. Yeah, we'll have to be mayin. Okay, so the Gemara says the following: If nasan omer, so if the boat drowns partial way through the journey, im nasan lo yitol, im lo nasan lo yitain. So this stalemate rule that wherever the money is, that's where it's going to remain, right? So this is one of the important sugyas for the idea that prepayment matters. If you just so happen to have paid, im nasan lo yitol, you can't recover. Im lo nasan lo yitain. So this is like where the money is makes all the difference. Now that's one important principle that emerges from the Gemara. This idea that we're just going to leave the money where it is. I told you about my case where I prepaid the woman who drives Noam to school. We saw earlier in our discussions about whether prepayment makes a difference. So a lot of that comes from this idea of Reb Nasan, im nasan lo yitol vim lo nasan lo yitain. Now, the Gemara limits the application of that idea. So the Gemara explicitly here holds that prepayment matters in some gray areas. It's not going to be dispositive or decisive in all cases. So Gemara says the following, and this will give us the second principle to emerge from the sugya. Hechi dami. Ilema bisfina zu v'yayin stam im nasan amaylo yito. So if the contract was worded in such a way that the boat owner is supplying a specific boat, But the wine merchant who's transporting his wares is hiring the boat to transfer whatever wine he provides for transportation. Then, namele havli svinta da anamai sina chamra. So then the wine owner has the upper hand, because he could always argue, provide me with a different boat, and I'm perfectly happy to continue transporting my wine. That's the story that the Gemara tells. How do you understand the legal principle that emerges from at least this part of the Gemara story?
So I take it that the the way Rashi reads the sugya, which I think is like a good first start, is that whoever can complete the deal as worded has the upper hand. So in other words, like,
yeah, put it, you know, but just put it in the, you're giving us like the positive formulation of it. What's the more negative formulation? You're saying whoever can complete
whoever can't complete the deal, his side of the deal loses out.
Exactly. I think the legal principle that emerges here is this notion that if one party is frustrating the performance of the agreement, right? So one party is clearly the reason, or one party is the one who's withholding performance, that party is deemed to be responsible or stuck with the loss. Now notice we're not talking about pshia. No one did anything wrong here. No one's negligent. No one's strictly speaking at fault. But in terms of which party is the source of frustrating the agreement, that party, if there's a party who's clearly frustrating it, even if it's at no fault of his own, then that party will be stuck with the loss. And that's what the Gemara here is saying, that if it's a svina zo, but yayin stam, so the Baal HaYayin is not frustrating the agreement. After all, maybe a few bottles of Baron Herzog are at the bottom of the ocean, but he could always start, providing some other kind of wine for transportation. But the Baal HaSvina, who was contracted for Svina Zo, you know, it was the Titanic that was being hired for transportation. Once the Titanic's at the bottom of the ocean, then the Baal HaTitanic is the one who's frustrating the agreement because he can no longer provide his boat. And that's what you get out of this idea of Havli Svina Dainamai Sina Chamro. Okay. And you can see, as Rashi says, this is what Cole pointed us to. He says, Im Nasan Lo Yitol. Sorry. Let's see. Blah, blah.
The word he uses is... He's got like this specific refrain.
The Kivan Debal Hayayin Yachol Lahashlim Tano Chayev Hasapan Lahamid Lo Svina. Right, so Rashi says, the Baal HaYayin is the one who's Yachal HaHashlam Tano. It's the Baal HaSvina who's frustrating it. And we'll see the formulation in the other case also. The same principle comes out of the next case in the Gemara, right? So you have Svina Stam V'Yayin Zeh. Same idea, just invert the party that's frustrating the agreement. The Baal HaSvina says, I will provide a boat to transport this wine that you need transported. And the Baal HaYayin says, I want you specifically to transport my Baron Herzogs. So im lo nasan, amai lo yitain. Then even if you didn't prepay, you have to make payments. Name alei havliyahu chamra v'anamai sina svinta. Same argument, just inverted. The Baal HaSvina here has the right of way, because he's saying, I was hired for a Svina Stam. I'm perfectly happy to replace the boat and offer you a different vessel for transportation. But the Baal HaYayin is frustrating performance because he can no longer provide the wine that he contracted the boat to transport. That wine is sitting at the bottom of the sea. Okay, and here's Rashi's formulation of the legal principle, as Cole said. Namely, Havliyahu Chamra Gufa, Vainamai Sina Svinta Achrini, Ho'il v'ha-safan yesh b'yado l'hashlim t'no, since the boat owner could complete the agreement, v'zeh me'akev. That's the important phrase, right? The Baal Hayayin is the one who's frustrating performance. He's the one who's preventing the contract from being executed, and therefore Yishalim Kolaschar, he's got to pay up. So I think we have it's a very nice and clear legal principle that emerges from the Sfina Zu Yayin Zeh, Sfina Zu Yayin Stam, and Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh. Whichever party is Ma'akev performance, that party is stuck with the bill. And that will overrule any prepayment idea. So even if you prepaid, you'll have to refund it. And if you didn't pay yet, you'll have to cough up payment. If it's that kind of case where there's a clear party who's ma'akev. Does everybody see the legal principle that emerges here? Does everyone, yeah, any questions or comments on it? Yakir?
Is there any significance to the fact that Rashi words it and focuses on the tainos?
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice diuk. I was wondering about that also. It's similar to the question of like yachal lomar mazalcha garam, right? Or is this like the superior? Is there some reason to distinguish between a superior claim and this more objective right of way, or who rightfully gets stuck with the loss? You're saying why this emphasis on the tainos? Anybody want to weigh in on Yakir's interesting ha'ara? Right, hello, tainas hatovea bari v'chazaka tovea yado atachtona. Well, maybe this one's not a good one, but certainly there's a yalo tainas hatovea bari.
I think it could just be that, like, in the absence of a raya, so if there's negligence, there's nothing to talk about. In the absence of not a raya, in the absence of a of fault or culpability, like, what you have are a series of, it's an extension of the Koach HaTaina view, a principle, which is that, like, you know, there's a certain just like legal freedom that you have to, you know, given like your situation going into the case, to win on the basis of like by assertion or by argument alone. And the idea is that, like, I think is that, you know, whoever can, you know, there are, you know, it's an unanswerable argument, I guess, in this case, to say, like, you know, I'm ready to hold my half of the bargain. You know, you're kind of like, you know, you're like making use of the chezkas chiyuv that the other guy is in with respect to you. I'm not really being coherent, but is it?
I think you know, it's I think Yakir, it's an interesting ha'ara. I don't know if it really matters so much for our purposes right now, because either way, we're saying either by dint of the force of your claim, or in virtue of some fact of the case, right? The party who's deemed to be frustrating the performance is the one who's stuck with the bill. That makes sense, Yakir? Yeah, okay, good. So let's look at the other. So the Gemara then says, well, there are two other cases. Two other cases. Just hold on, guys, 1 second. Just give me 1 second after. Okay. Let's look at the other two cases. Here. The Gemara says, so rather, maybe Rav Nassan's principle of, if you prepaid, we leave the money where it is, and if not, you have to. This idea that you just leave the money wherever it is, and nasan lo yitel vim lo nasan lo yitain, would apply in the case of Sfina Stam. Would apply in the case of Sfina Zu v'yayin zeh, but not in the case of Sfina Stam v'yayin Stam. right? So the Gemara basically concedes that if one party is frustrating performance, that party is stuck with the loss. But there are two logically possible cases where the parties are in equal position. Neither one is frustrating performance more than the other. The case where both parties said zu v'zeh, so neither party could provide the item that was contracted for, and the case where both parties contracted stam, yayin stam and sfina stam, where both parties can still provide the thing that was contracted for. Now, the Gemara, what's interesting is that Rav Papa distinguishes between them. He says the idea that the prepayment matters, we'll just leave the money where it is, that applies to Svina Zu V'Yayin Zeh, a case where both parties are frustrating performance, if that's a logically consistent category even, right? Both parties are deemed to be the cause of non-performance, but in a case of Svina Stam V'Yayin Stam, where both parties are able to perform, right, both parties are able to go through with the agreement still, then they just split the loss evenly between them. Okay? So what we have to figure out here is why is there this distinction within the parties being on equal playing fields between neither party being able to perform versus both parties being able to perform? And secondly, we now have a new interesting principle of loss allocation, which is yachloku. Right? Literally, you just split the loss between the parties. And, you know, where does that come from? So how do you understand the distinction between Svina Zu Yayin Zeh versus Svina Stam Yayin Stam? Why is there a different rule in those cases?
So I think that the... So the Svina Zu Yayin Zu case is where they're in equally bad positions. The Svina Stam Yayin Stam case, they're in equally good positions. Typically, in the Mamanu Mutaba Safek cases, equally bad positions, the psak is Kol Dalim Gvar. Hamotzi Mechavera Avaraya is kind of just the judicial version of Kol Dalim Gvar. Just like whoever has, you know, basically whoever can make the stronger case, in court wins. Why not Kol Dalim Gvar? Because they each of them does have like some. Usually, Kol Dalim Gvar is like neither of them is really. It's like Tina's alone that they've got, and neither of them has like enough to win the day on his own. Here, like there is a contract. You do have to make a decision. It's just neither of them has, the case of the classic Kol Dalim Gvar case is like, you know, two people come and one of them says, well, this is my ship. And the second one says, this is my ship. And the court is like, neither of you has anything. We don't care. Hamotzi Mechavera L'Avaraya can be used kind of in the same way, but you are forced to make a decision. In the case of, Yachloku, there's a whole machlokas already shown him about, principally between, on the one hand, the Rambam and the Baalei Tosfos, and on the other hand, the other of the Chachmei Sfarad. The disagreement is whether Yachloku is something that we use when it really could be, like, the correct decision, all the evidence considering, or whether we're just trying to cool down a conflict between claims. So the Chachmei Sfarad, led by the Rashba and the Ramban, are much more willy-nilly about Yachloku. The Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri think that, like, you know, the classic case is, and the Rambam is, like, very vivid about this in the relevant halachos about the first sukkah in Baba Metzia. If both parties have their hands, like, literally at the 50-50 mark on the talis, then we say Yachloku, because they're equal muchzakim. That's, like, the only place... where you have like a chazaka war that the Rambam is willing to say yachloku. I think it's the same principle here, where like both of them have very good claims why they should not have to bear the loss. As a result, we say yachloku. because from the perspective of the court, like, either side could go all the way. It's a bit, you know, it's a race to the top, not a race to the bottom. So I think that's what accounts for the difference.
So good. So I think what you're saying is that if neither party is at fault, right, Svina Stam, Yayin Stam, then each party has a fully legitimate claim to their position. Like, it's like the two people who are holding on to half a talus. And
enough to win on his own.
Yeah, and so each gets a portion of, you know, they split the loss evenly. You know, they're in equally good positions. Each has, like, a full legitimate claim to their arguments. So we actually just say, we'll divide the loss evenly between the two of you. That's different from the case where both parties are at fault. Both parties are frustrating the agreement. There, neither party has a legitimate claim to their position or to be compensated or whatever, to reallocate the loss. And so we just leave things as they are. You know, im nasan lo yitol, ve im natal lo yisein. How does it go, right? Im nasan lo yitol, vim lo nasan lo yitain. So just to put it again in a slightly different way, if both parties are at fault, then neither party is really entitled to anything, so we leave the loss where it falls. If neither party is at fault, then both parties in principle are entitled to be compensated, not to be stuck with the loss, and so we divvy it up evenly between them. That's the idea, Cole, right? I think that's a nice way of putting it. And you can see Rashi seems to be going in this direction. Rashi says, here, Yayin Zev Isfina Zu is a case of Lo Biyad Zev Izela Hashlim, right? Both parties are frustrating the agreement, so neither party has a right of way. So therefore, Yad HaToveya Al HaTachtona, the claimant is always going to be in the weaker position because he has no valid claim to redistribute the loss. Da'amar Leheach Ana Lo Ma'akvana. Right, the other guy could always say, hey, I'm not preventing things, right? So you have no reason to fault me. And the Cholkin case is a case of Biyad Shnehem Lahashlim. Both parties are able to go through. Both parties, I guess, are entitled to say they're not breaching or they're not frustrating. And therefore, both parties are entitled to be remunerated. And we split the loss evenly. The Zolt has a hand, so let's take the Zolt's hand. Hey, Zolt.
Yeah, two comments, both on Rashi's, I guess, interpretation. The first, I think, relates to, can you hear me well?
Pretty well, you know, it's, you know, you don't sound like you're hosting a talk show with, like, fancy equipment, but...
All right.
You're intelligible.
Well, I'll make do, I guess.
You're intelligible.
All right, so the first comment is, I think, relates to Yakir's point, which is that I think Rashi seems to focus a lot on the Toveas and the Nitvas or Tainas, because I think the argument goes that if they don't have valid Tainas, in the case where it's Yain Zed Svinazu, so Basin just doesn't get involved. Basin only will get involved if there's like a valid Taina to bring it to Basin. And right. I think that's what Rashi's pointing out, that when neither party can be mashlim, so then Beis Din just says, like, we're not going to get involved, and the focus is really on the Tainos, whether Tainos, like, make us or make Beis Din have the ability to do anything.
Yeah, seriously. So this is, well, I guess another way of putting it is, you know, this presumption in terms of judicial conservatism. I know Cole went back and forth on the appropriateness of that phrase. So the court will generally stay out unless there's reason for them to intervene, right? And what's happening...
Yeah, I don't know if that's like a general principle. I don't know if I would go that far as like it's a you know, it's a total principle throughout law. But I think in terms of like Mamon and Mutl Besafe cases where like really based in doesn't know what should happen because it's a real, there's just no party has a winning claim. So if neither party has anything, right? There's really nothing to do. So basically, they just said, like, we're not gonna even take this case up.
Right. Another way of saying it is that we'll leave the loss where it falls unless there's reason to reallocate it. Right, Yoni?
Yeah.
So that's less about judicial conservatism and more about losses, right? Losses lie where they fall unless there's some really good reason to step in and move things around. And so,
well, or either a reason to move things around or a reason that, or an ability to move things around.
Based off a claim, based off the strength of the
person. Yeah, if there's just no, like, entering the case won't change anything, what's the point of adjudicating it?
Yeah, I think it's a good formulation. And it's a nice way of connecting. Nice way of connecting it to Yekir's point.
Second point is, I think Rashi's pointing this. Maybe I'm overreading it, but this is like another variation, a little bit on like the Cole's explanation of why if you do say Yain Stam and Sfina Stam, you'd get half. I think Rashi's pointing to the fact that there may be an argument to say that ideally, Beit Din sees any case of Mamon Mutl B'Safek as ideally both parties should split it. Like, the fairest way of resolving it is a split. Everyone gets half. So if both parties can force the other party to give them half, so then Beit Din is going to enforce that half. If, though, you can't enforce that half because, you know, they can't fulfill the contract anyway, so at that point we use the other solution of the money stays where it is.
So are you saying that this is, I guess, this is closely related to your first point. You're saying that there's a default presumption in favor of Yachloku, let the parties share.
It sounds like it, because it sounds like Rashi's saying Cholkin in Kibel Yachzir Achetzi. It's a very big focus, and at the end is not on Yachzir Achetzi. Sharei Biyach Neim LeHashlim, like the Chetzi. Each party can get pretty much like their half back.
No, I think he means that Sharei Biyach Neim LeHashlim here. He means that each party is able to follow through with the contract. Neither party.
What about the next line? Though, if each party won't give him the half that he deserves, so then he would get, then he should just fulfill the tie and get the full amount. Or
yeah, like, well, like, yeah.
Why include militein hachetzi? Just anything, you know, or his.
Well, I think Rashi here. This is interesting, and I think this relates to both your and Yakir's point that, you know, this is like a Nash equilibrium or something, right? It's like a game theoretical equilibrium. So if anybody wants to write the book on game theory and, you know, halachic thought, this is one of the places to start, right? So Rashi's saying, look, the players here have kind of each player can say, I'm willing to bring a replacement boat, I'm willing to bring a replacement wine, right? And so they could each kind of make this move. But what will they gain from it in the end, right? So, yeah, I guess if both parties want to move forward with performance, then they could both move forward with performance. I bring my wine, you bring your boat, I pay you for the whole journey because I got wine across the whole river in the end of the day, right? But if the parties don't want to do that, then it's rational for them to settle on this 50-50 split, because otherwise the other party could just force you into having to bring, right, depending which party you are, either a replacement boat or a replacement wine. So this is a rational, stable resolution to this kind of threat that I'm just going to go through with the contract and bring another boat to, you know, force you to provide more wine to be transported. And I think it relates to Yakir's point, because Rashi's saying, given the moves that are available to each player, it's just rational for them to agree to this 50-50 stalemate. Do you see that, Yoni?
Yeah, I think, though, that what I'm harping on is the fact that if, and then the decision that they both deserve half seems to be a judicial decision, and then both parties are claiming they want the full amount, they want whatever, you know, they want the full payment, or they get the money full, all the money back, and it's a judicial decision that they still only get, that they split the money into half. But Rashi's language implies that it's not a judicial decision that decided to get half. It's kind of what they deserve to begin with. At that point, you'd expect Beit Din to already be involved. And yet, Beit Din is not yet involved. And nonetheless, they seem to be getting half, implying to some extent that maybe half is the, you know, the best resolution to their kind of conundrum.
It could be. I think the Rashi's saying here is that because the half is the best resolution, because it's silly to push the parties. Look, Rashi's saying, if both parties really want to provide replacements, they would just do that, right? So the fact they're litigating means that this guy doesn't want to bring a replacement boat and that guy doesn't want to bring a replacement wine, right? So each party has the threat of forcing the other party to go through with the agreement, kind of a waste for the other party to do that if he doesn't need the service. And so he's saying, because this stalemate makes the most sense for the parties, that's why it's the preferred resolution of the halakha for the case. So I'm not sure that I agree with you that you think that yachloku is like antecedently the right resolution, distinct from the way the equilibrium plays out based off the moves available to the two parties. Let's see. Yakir, did you want to weigh in on? You have a hand, and Yair has a hand. So,
yeah, I was actually just going to say exactly what you just said, that Rashi's seems to be basing himself on equilibrium. I think that's kind of different from what Cole said before. It's not about some general principle about both parties having good claims, and that's what leads to the yachloku. It's the specific existence of this equilibrium that forces it.
Oh, look, we have our math expert here weighing in on the game theoretic framework. Yeah, so I mean, Yakir is, and Yakir, this is consistent with your earlier point about the Tainas being so prominent in Rashi, right?
Right. I mean, for this part, yeah, I think it's understandable why Rashi focuses on the Tainos.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Good. The question is, you know, I think Yakir might be right in Rashi's framework. We have to look a little more broadly to see if the other Rishonim work within Rashi's parameters or whether they fall back into Cole's parameters. Right. Look, it's a machlokas between the Gedolei New Haven over here. It's a man of the mathematical sciences and a man of the arts and humanities. All right, Yair. You have a comment?
Yeah, I'm just building on your analysis of Yomi's points. I'm a little confused by the ending of this Gemara, in the sense that according to Rashi, Vyachnei and Mahashlin, so there's a contract. They're both able to perform the contract. The rule should be whatever rule there is for someone who wants to be chozer in a contract, whether the poet or the malavias. So it's unclear to me why there's any, you know, money moving around outside of those rules.
Explain that one more time. You're saying there should be a principle of chazara here that's at play?
Right, meaning as long as they could both fulfill the contracts, then they should both be obligated to fulfill the contract normally. And if one of them doesn't want to fulfill the contract, then the normal rules of a poll that wants to be closer in a contract or a...
Ah, so I think
neither one wants to fulfill the contract. That's the problem. And it's abundantly clear to everyone involved that no one actually wants to go through with the contract anymore.
Here.
Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Here, do you want to follow up with that? Meaning...
Meaning, what I had in my head is talking about the schar of the future fulfillment of the contract. But, right, if Yakir's right, then no one wants to fulfill the contract at this point. But money was still lost in the context of this contractual relationship, so someone still has to deal with that.
Yeah. Good. So I'd say we have these main principles that come out of the sugi. Here's the straightforward reading. So we get the idea of the party that's frustrating performance is generally stuck with the loss. We have the idea that prepayment matters in a specific, in one kind of a case. And then we distinguish internally between two kinds of cases where neither party is frustrating performance more than the other. So in the case where neither party is at fault, that's the Sfina Stam, Yayin Stam, then we say Yachloku. So we have an open question here whether that's because of some principle of, as Cole's saying, that each party is entitled to be compensated or reimbursed for the loss in some way, or Yakir's interpretation that this is a game theoretical equilibrium that's reached based off the, I guess, the rational decision-making of the parties. And that's in contrast to the case where we say just leave things as they are, let the loss lie where it falls, which happens when both parties are frustrating the agreement. When both parties are frustrating it, that's the Sfina Stam Yayin that's the Sfina Zu Yayin Ze, then we leave things where they fall. So we have a comment in the okay, good. Yeah, Kira, you want to, you'll send out an email afterwards to Cole and everyone, just fleshing out your point?
I can try. You actually said my point first, so maybe you should send the email.
I'll defer to you, Yakir.
Yeah, I dropped out of multivariable calculus and I got a B in microeconomics, so I'm not such a, you know.
Maybe if you had Yakir as your TA, you would have done better.
Right. Yeah, that was the problem. I like a nice analytic synthetic distinction.
Let's take a quick look at the Pesachei Choshen's formulation here in his footnotes in the third parak in Hilchos Chiros. He addresses this distinction between both parties being at fault versus neither party being at fault. I don't think that his formulation here is super precise, but let's just see what he says. He says, "Misayim b'gemar shebesfina stam v'yayin stam cholkin, kivan shekol echad yochal l'kayim hatnai, kolzman shelo yasu kain, shnehem shavim." Okay? "V'nir lehosef biyur, divesfina zu, v'yayin ze," which is when both parties are at fault, "hamitzius kvar muchletes, sheshneem einam yecholim l'kayim hatnai, v'eino omed lehizbarer yoser, v'lchein arminon hamotim yechaber olav araya. Aval besfina stam v'yayin stam, sheshneem adayin yecholim l'kayim hatnai, v'adavar taloi v'omed shema yizkayim hatnai, ein hachaluka ela kematzav beinayim ad sheyizbarer." I think he's really getting at a third idea here that explains the distinction. He's thinking that one is just, you know, sometimes people say, you know, like people like this distinction between like a stalemate and a draw. I don't know, is that a distinction?
Yeah, stalemate is like, you know, a stalemate is it's hot, like it can't get hotter, and a draw is just a stalemate is what they had in World War One. A draw is what you have after 21 moves where one player only has a king.
Right.
That was effective.
Right. So maybe it's not exactly what he's getting at, so maybe that's slightly, I need a slightly different distinction. But his point is that if it's a stalemate where you cannot progress any further, no party has a good move available to him. That's the Sfina Zu Yayin Zeb. Both parties are frustrating. Then we just say Hamotim Yechaber Olav Haraya. But if there's maybe draw is not the right word here, but if something could change, right, so there are moves available to either party, then just that there's yeah,
that's the term for it, right, in Bava Basra.
Then we'll say yachloku.
Ikalamekam alayadmils.
Exactly.
As opposed to lekam.
Right. So the question, I mean, it's an interesting distinction that he raises. I don't see why this should explain why we apply Motamei Chaver Olav Haraya rule versus the Yachluku rule, right? Why should a Matzav Beinayim suggest a Yachluku answer versus...
because Yachluku is activist.
Why should he, right, so why should he be activist when the are good moves available to each party?
No. Lehefech. You're an activist when there aren't good moves available.
Right, that's what I'm saying. He's
no, you're
That's what I'm saying. It comes out backwards.
Sorry. How does he have it?
In Sfina Stam and Yayin Stam, which is where we say Yachloku, Sheshneim Adayim Yicholim Lekayim Atanai.
Oh.
That's where we say Yachloku.
Sfina Stam and Yayin Hamitzius Kfar Mechleta Sheshneim Eino Yicholim Lekayim Atanai Eino Medlis Bar Yoser. No, he's just got that wrong. I apologize. That's exactly backwards. I mean, he's talking about, it's confusing because Eno Omed Lispar Yoser is talking about a Raya, not about a, in Chezkas, Ikalamekam Alea de Milsa is a Machlokes, Rab Shmuel, whether it's Yachloku or Shur the Dedaini. Ikalamekam Alea de Milsa is either Kol Da'alim Var or Munach. But it's just not at all precise the way he's got it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I think I really just wanted, so this is a good overview of the basic principles that emerge in the sugya. We still have to nail down exactly why some of these differences make a difference. Let me just point you to what you should look at for our next chabura. So there's. Very important machlokas we've shown him here. I don't think it affects the description of the principles that we articulated today, but it does affect their scope and their interaction with the other rules of loss allocation. And that is when the Gemara here debates whether you have to pay or whether you get refunded. The standard reading of the Gemara is as we read it just now, and that is that it's about the whole journey. When the Gemara says you got to pay, it means you're paying for the whole journey. And when it says you could get a refund, that means a refund for the whole journey. Summary shown him here, you could see in the Ritva, is not sure how to reconcile this view with the sugya we read on Tuesday, that if the chamor dies, b'chatzia derech, you got to pay for half the route. Remember that discussion, if you're getting hana, you know, as Cole said, if you're getting from one part of the shire to the other part of the shire, you know, you got to pay for the partial trip. So that leads some Rishonim here to think that maybe the debate is only about the uncompleted portion of the trip. Do you have to make payment? Can you get refunded for that second leg that wasn't completed? But maybe there's some consensus that, of course, you have to pay for the partially completed leg of the journey. That's Machlokas Rishonim here. Well, you take a look at the Ritva for a discussion of that, which we'll discuss. Interestingly, the Ritva and it also explicitly brings up an important discussion about how to reconcile this principle, which seems to lay the loss at the feet of the party that's frustrating performance, with the superior knowledge / Motzi Mechaber Olav Haraya rule, which said that as between a Balabayas and a Poel, we lay the loss at the party with superior information, or if they're in equipoise, I don't have to say equipoise because Adam's not here. If they're in equipoise, then the motzi is the one who's stuck with the loss. So that's taken up explicitly by the Ritva. It's an interesting question how to reconcile these two rules and which one of them gets priority. Take a look also at Tosos and Ayin Tess. So it's really just, I want you to see the Tosos and the Ritva and Ayin Tess, where he injects the question of property transfer into this discussion. One of the reasons that we've seen why one reason to stick the loss on one party is if that party is considered to have like purchased the good or purchased the labor or acquired the entity, right? Usually ones follows the owner. It's a risk of ownership. And so Tosus here injects that into this analysis. He's saying maybe one fact that could explain the loss allocation in the Sfina Sugya is whether we view the Yayin owner as having purchased the boat or purchasing the trip, which is a reason why he should get stuck with Ones in some cases. And you'll see he also talks about this idea of Mazalo Garam, and how to reconcile the Sfina Zu Yayin Stam rule that the frustrating party gets stuck with the loss with the Motzi Mechavero all of Haraya rule of superior knowledge slash the Motzi is the one who should have made it tonight. All right? So that's what we'll pick up with right after Yom Tov. Try to get a sense of these Rishonim. It's a little complicated, but I think it's good that we at least got the main principles of the Sugya out here in the open so we can move forward after Yom Tov. All right, everyone?
People might want to just, like, it's very straightforward. The Gemara is about Mamun and Mutal B'Safek might be useful to look at in Chizkas Abatim. It's like a blot and a half, and they're short.
Yeah. You know, most of the Bava Basra is short because the Rashbam.
Prolix. All right, good Yantif, right. Everybody.
Okay, everyone, have a good Yantif. Good to see everyone. Cole, enjoy your Yantif in Israel. Take care. Oh, he's always the first to sign off. Ben, guys, June 14th, right, Ben?
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, thank God.
What's the...